Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. In the studio today with Representatives Susie Hamilton and Ted Davis of New Hanover County, they're giving us a look at what's likely to come up during this legislative session in Raleigh. You're invited to join the discussion. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. And before we went to break, we said that we would talk about historic preservation tax credits. That's another program that sunsetted December 31st and was not renewed during this last session. And the two of you spoke last night in Wilmington. Can you tell us about that?
That was a great opportunity to talk with individuals in the city of Wilmington that are interested in the historic preservation credits. And it was a very good time for Susie and I to be able to talk one-on-one with people and answer their questions. Bottom line is when we went through tax reform last session in conjunction with the budget, as you know, the tax rate was lowered as far as personal income tax. It was also lowered as far as corporate income tax. And one of the things that we were told by those who formulated that plan, mainly Senator Rucho in the Senate, was that for it to work, for it to truly work, then all of these incentives and tax credits were going to have to go away. Now, there are some exceptions to that that I may take issue with, as well as Susie, that remain in effect.
But, and what are some of those exceptions?
Well,
that you're
such as
about?
There's NASCAR. There's an exception there. There's one with involves airports, airplanes, U.S. Air.
That's right. Jet fuel tax credits that are still on the books.
Right. So, and those will be addressed this particular session. But the bottom line was, because I remember when I was told that, I raised my hand and said, "Well, wait a minute. You mean you're talking about getting rid of the film credits and some of these other credits that are vitally important to my area down in, you know, Wilmington, New Hanover County?" They said yes. So I think one of the biggest problems that we face going into this particular session in trying to do anything to get back any of the incentives or the credits that have been taken away is I'm going to have to justify that to those who are so geared towards this tax reform that, okay, well, tax reform's fine, but you can't do that to the detriment, you know, of so many people that it can have an adverse effect on. And we really have got to sell that message to show the importance and the magnitude of the impact that taking away these credits can have on people who actually live here and depend on that for their livelihood to justify, well, then so what with the tax reform? This is more important. We've got to make it work together.
Now, is Governor McCrory backing the idea of historic preservation tax credits?
He is now.
This is a switch.
This is a switch. During the first year he was in office when the tax reform bill was going through, he was adamant that historic preservation tax credits and film incentives were going to become grant programs. That was his firm line in the sand. What he obviously and rightfully has realized is that the grant program doesn't work for the historic preservation tax credits, just as we will learn this year in 2015 that the film program does not – I mean that the grant program does not work for film either. It's been proven in other states. So, you know, these are I was thrilled to see that he's come to that realization and understanding, and we hope that we can work through some of the film issues with him as well as other leaders from the House and the Senate.
And he's also signed on to this Mayor's Coalition. There's a legislative agenda from mayors across the state.
Right, the Metro Mayor's Coalition, the League of Municipalities, Preservation North Carolina, the State Historic Preservation Office, rural communities and urban communities alike who have active preservation programs. The issue is going to be, however, is Senator Berger, president of our Senate, president pro tem of the Senate, has already stated that it's not consistent with the tax policy changes that have been made by the legislature. So that was reported yesterday. So we're already looking as if we're going to have a battle on our hands to return the preservation credits, even though we have some higher level support at this point.
Now, this really raises the larger issue of this interesting dynamic in the legislature, there's a supermajority, a Republican governor, Republican House, and Republican Senate, and yet there appears to be a pretty sharp division in terms of ideology and how the two chambers deal with these issues.
Oh, well, there is, but to go back to what Susie was commenting on, if you look at it, you really got three factions dealing with these issues. I'll include film and the historic tax preservation together. You've got the governor's office and what the governor would like to have done. You've got the House and what the House would like to get done. You've got the Senate, what the Senate would like to get done. And under the governor, I'll put the Cultural Resources Department, Secretary Susan Klutz, who's very much in favor of the historic tax preservation. I'm glad to see that she is putting together a team that is going to be going statewide to promote the historic tax preservation. You've also got, you mentioned it, the League of Municipalities doing the same thing. As a matter of fact, the Secretary was very complimentary about what happened last night. We're the first of anybody in the state to have a program designed towards talking about the historic tax preservation. So my point being that if we can get the House behind it, if we get the governor behind it, then hopefully between those two, we can get enough support in the Senate to make it go through there.
We did get a call. He didn't want to stay on the line, but he has a question, and maybe this is something the two of you can clarify briefly. It's a good question. He's asking, what's the difference between tax incentives and a grant? And this is sort of the crux of the issue here for the Cape Fear region.
Wow, that is a great question. A grant program is a predetermined amount of money to be distributed. And the incentive programs for historic preservation, jet fuel, film incentives, things of that nature are more or less there are strict guidelines as to what must be done in terms of performance in order to qualify for a return on your investment. The difference with that is fundamental in the private sector, and that is that it's very difficult for a business to decide on where they're going to do business while they're waiting on the potential to be awarded a grant versus if they understand the statutory requirements and know that they can meet those statutory requirements, then they are, in effect, guaranteed the return on their investment.
So they will receive that tax rebate.
Yeah,
you meet these criteria,
you get the tax rebate. And it is a performance-based thing, whereas a grant program, you award the grant prior to performance. And so that's really the limitation on private business, which is what we're all working toward together to try to increase in North Carolina. I mean, Ted and I want economic development desperately. We believe in these incentives. I mean, for instance, Ted was chairman of the county commissioners at a time in New Hanover County when he presided over many new companies coming to town utilizing the state and local tax incentives that were tax credits. We built a pretty good economy around the state utilizing these tax incentives as credits and rebates as opposed to trying to put them into a grant program. So, I mean, there's value and merit in the programs that we've had prior to that have demonstrated that private business can utilize those effectively.
You're listening to Coastline. It's our legislative look ahead for 2015. Which issues are likely to claim the spotlight in Raleigh this year? Joining us in studio today, Representatives Ted Davis and Susie Hamilton. If you have a question for them, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using CoastlineHQR. Governor Pat McCrory, of course, was in Washington meeting with President Obama yesterday. They talked about Medicaid expansion, and Governor Pat McCrory says he intends to push for the authority to develop North Carolina's own health care program here as opposed to Washington's plan, and those were his words. Can you explain what this might mean in practical reality? What might he be pushing for?
I cannot explain what the governor may mean by that. I can tell you from the Republican side, in the House, the Medicaid expansion, it is a very serious issue and something that needs to be looked at very carefully. I know that in the past, the majority of the Republican Party did not support that expansion, based in part because of the cost that was already there. And if we can't control that, how in the world can we control having additional people being covered with additional expenses? There's a lot of abuse that has taken place in that program. It just felt like, and I'm speaking for the Republican, that you needed to get the House in order and under control before you allowed additional things to come in. And I might always add, I would also like to add, that yes, there would be upfront money from the federal government to do that, but that doesn't last forever. And eventually, the state's going to have to take this over. I know.
And
that,
so Republican opposition, even though that would have, the cost would have been covered initially, Republican opposition was about what's going to happen 10 years from now.
That was part of it because, for instance, my first year during the long session, the legislature had to appropriate $500 million to make up for the shortfall just that period of time. And you take $500 million and apply it to the Medicaid when that could have been used for schools and for other things, that's a hard pill to swallow. So what we were trying to do was just to get the cost factor under control before we talked about doing any further expansion.
A Duke University professor who specializes in health policy, this came from a report done by NPR member station WUNC, talking to this Duke professor who says, in 2016, you'd be talking on the order of over $4 billion flowing into the state that otherwise wouldn't be. In other words, North Carolina is losing out on income.
Yes, we are.
Without the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
And that's something that Republican governors across the country are starting to recognize,
yeah.
It sounds like. And so they're looking for creative, original ways to expand Medicaid?
Well, we have traditionally in North Carolina, as well as in every other state of the union, because there's no way to predict how many people are going to get sick who are on Medicaid in your state, every year there has to be an appropriation in the hundreds of millions of dollars to cover cost overruns. So it sounds like a very big number, but I think it's important to recognize that that's been ongoing, and it happens in every state of the union. North Carolina's growth in Medicaid over the years in terms of its use and its costs, more importantly, have been – North Carolina's rates have been one of the slowest growing in the country. In fact, we've been looked at as a model state into how to manage the Medicaid programs. Missing out on the federal return of this money to expand the services – to people who don't currently qualify would infuse a substantial amount of money into our economy in North Carolina, create jobs, and provide health care for about 500,000 people, which is bumping up against about 5% of our population. A healthy population, a well-insured population, is a more productive population. There's direct correlation to people's health versus how they're able to participate in the world and make a living, so to speak. So we're not talking about, there's this idea of what a person on Medicaid looks like and what they may be and what their circumstances may be. But the majority of people that are on Medicaid in this country are children and people with disabilities, people who are injured and then are no longer able to provide for themselves. It's really one degree of separation from the rest of the world. Any one of us could walk out here tomorrow, get smacked by a bus, and then be eligible for Medicaid. You know, there's a lot of philosophy there, and there's a lot of fiscal discussion, but better health care, access to health care adds to your quality of life.
You're listening to Coastline. It's our legislative look ahead for 2015. Which issues are likely to gain traction in Raleigh this year? Joining us in studio today to answer those questions, Representative Susie Hamilton and Ted Davis. If you have a question for them, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I want to switch gears to how things work in Raleigh. I think so many of us, you know, we get
tell
the
us.
Reports.
When you figure it out, let me know,
call
please.
Us, yeah.
I understand why you say that. But there are so many interesting dynamics going on here. And I think your average person who has a job and a family and just hears about outcomes, doesn't really understand the process. Can you give us the sort of Schoolhouse Rock version of what happens in Raleigh and how things come to pass?
There's an old saying that I love, and that is no man, woman, child, or dog is safe when the legislature is in session. It has been an amazing trip for me to go from a five-member board of commissioners to a House of Representatives with 120 different people with 120 different attitudes, 120 different opinions. Whereas I used to only have to get two votes for a majority of three, you now have to have 61 to get anything done.
And everybody was from the same region, too,
exactly,
on the county commission.
Exactly. And that part of it's fascinating to me because it's kind of like you get four or five people in a line, you whisper something in one end, and what comes out the other end after they whispered each other. Because I've actually seen legislators who introduced a bill that went to a committee come back and look at it and say, this isn't the same thing. This isn't even the same thing that I started with. It's just an unusual creature that if you weren't there experiencing, you truly couldn't understand it. Because I thought, like so many, if you want to introduce a bill, you just introduce it, you go to the House floor, you debate it, and you vote on it. And that's the furthest from the way it happens.
What actually happens?
Yeah, I'll try to be as quickly as possible. The first thing, anybody can introduce a bill. That's the easiest thing in the world, is to draw a bill up and get it introduced. Or to file it with the clerk. It's up to the speaker and the rules chairman what goes on after that. If it does go forward, you have a first reading. All the first reading is where you go into a session and it's read into the record. What happens then is that the speaker, through the rules chairman, decides what committees that bill will go to. It could be one, it could be three, whatever. All right, this is when it really starts. When it goes to that first committee, if the committee chair doesn't want to hear it for whatever reason, it's dead. It never goes any further. If you have a committee meeting, unless you get a favorable report, which means a majority of the people on that committee vote to proceed with it, you're dead. If you get through that committee, you go to the next committee. I mean, you have to go through that process. Once you get through with that, you then go to the House floor. You have what's called the second reading, where you actually debate it and vote on it. If that's defeated, you're through. If that passes, you go to a third reading, where you could possibly have more debate and a vote. If that goes down, that's great. Then it goes to the Senate, and it starts all over again. So you have to have somebody in the Senate that will take the lead on getting it through. Usually the House member that introduced in the House will go to all the city committee meetings, so that hopefully they will all get favorable reports. If that is all done and the Senate votes on it with no changes and it comes back to the House, we can vote on it to concur and that's it. If not, and there are any changes, it comes back and the House decides whether to accept the changes or not. And if they don't, you have to go to what's called a conference, where members of each chamber get together and go into a room and hammer it out. And remember, that's what happens if a bill goes to the House first. Well, the same thing in the opposite order happens if it goes to the Senate first.
Right. And it's clear as mud, but believe it or not, it does work. I mean, we don't always get the results we want, but the process does work. I think the key thing to remember is that we are a bicameral chamber. If we can pass anything we want to out of the House, and it doesn't necessarily have to be passed by the Senate and vice versa. And if it doesn't get passed by both chambers, then it's
so
dead.
So relationships are key.
Yes.
And we're going to go to break in just a minute or so. What can you tell us about the presumptive new House Speaker, Tim Moore? Do you know him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Worked with Tim closely my first two terms, and intend to and expect to do so during my third term. He and I graduated from Chapel Hill together.
So, same year.
Yeah. No, actually, I think Tim's older than me. Sorry, Tim. we have a good working relationship. Tim's a straight up guy, and was rules chairman last year. He's very organized, a very, very gifted attorney, and I think he'll do a good job in the legislature.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's our legislative look ahead with State Representative Susie Hamilton and Ted Davis Jr., both from New Hanover County. If you have a question for either of them, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using @CoastlineHQR. We'll be back in about 90 seconds. You're listening to Coastline.